Hey, listeners, welcome back to A Penny for Your Thoughts. It's been some time since we've been with you, but we're back. And Lauren and I today are going to talk about the word of the year and check in with each other and see where things are. In terms of that, you know, we're going to talk about doing more of the right things, finding joy in that spark of inspiration. And Lauren talks about some really great things like leading with curiosity, which I counter back with, how do you do this and lead from a place of love instead of a place of fear? This is a really great podcast. It turned into something that I don't think we were expecting, and we hope you really enjoy it. Stay tuned. We're coming at you. And welcome back to another episode of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm sure you thought that we were dead, listeners, but we're not. We're not. We're just very, very busy women, and we are back with, and I hate to say this, our first episode of 2024 in April. Lauren, I'm looking at you.
It was my fault. It's me. I'm the problem. I'm the problem. It's me.
What a way to start out. Well, hey, you know what? I mean, okay, so we've had a couple of misses. We had some technology issues in December, but we had some really good quality content that we did end up getting out. And really, when we left our listeners last, and I don't want to say high and dry, but we left our listeners last, we left them with a bit of an assignment. And that assignment was to pick a word.
My word was more, that I wanted to do more of the right things and really focus the effort and energy on the things that truly brought joy and that spark inspiration. And it's been really cool to sort of let that be my North Star. And it's been pretty darn incredible what has happened thus far. So I'm really excited to dive into this with you, girl.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I think for me, it's like, it's that mindset shift, right? Like we go back to that reticular activation system and it focuses and hyper-focuses on what you focus on. And, you know, I have literally just spent hours in terms of networking and going to events. Like we're hosting a networking event this weekend at an existing fundraiser, which is great because we're partnering with them for that. But like even in that space, it's like, you know, I've had some things that I thought were going to be really, really big and really awesome that in the first quarter completely fell apart. And that was really disheartening because, you know, I was expecting to be moving in different circles and at different levels and, you know, all of these different things. I had this vision in my mind that felt like it was attached to advancement. And, you know, when those things kind of fell out from underneath me, it was really disappointing and I felt sad and I let myself sit with it. But, you know, every day I start my day with reflection and journaling. And one of the things that I've come to realize is that through that process, I see that what is meant for me is always going to come to me. And, you know, while I was really disappointed in that space when I didn't realize those things that I thought were attached to where I was going with advancement, I have found myself wealthy in advancement in other areas with other organizations doing work that is super high value add. Like I had out of nowhere, Lauren, I received this email from a VP of production in Sarnia, Ontario, who I have never met. Mm-hmm. We've exchanged a couple of emails. She's seen my service catalog. And she said, hey, do you have time to do a facilitation? And it was a really critical nonprofit, brand new nonprofit working with survivor victims of assault and abuse in sport. And I didn't know that they were interviewing multiples. I was just like, oh, okay. You know, I came back from this really fulfilling, you know, offsite journey with one of my Indigenous clients. And I was just on this high and I'm wearing these big auntie earrings because I got big auntie status the first, like the last day of the conference with these people. So, so powerful.
So cool.
And this group got on and I was expecting one person and I'm coming off of like a 12-hour day, the day before facilitating and driving home from Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, these other faces just start popping up on this Teams call. So before I know it, it's a panel interview with five individuals.
Wow.
And they said, this is what we're looking for. And I said to them, great, we can do this, 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 and this. And they said, but can you do it within 2 weeks?
Let's go.
Yeah. I'm like, I can do anything. Give me 48 hours and I can get it done. Like I'm a machine when it comes to stuff like that. And so we came to an agreement. Mm-hmm. I wrote them a proposal. I sent it over to them. They signed off on it. And I ended up in Sarnia doing some of what I would classify as some of the most meaningful work that I think I've ever done. And I had weeks of this really deep cultural change that is changing institutions, that is changing and challenging the way that our government thinks, how they react, how they behave, and empowering this group of really, really, really beautiful advocates for change, mm-hmm. in a way, and also helping them heal from certain elements of their organization and really allowing them to create trust. And, yeah. and, you know, so I look at it and it's like, I think we have a vision of what we think that word is going to do and where it's going to take us. But if we just jump in the canoe and we just let the current take us where we're going to go, it is unbelievable. And that daily reflection that I sit with every day opens up these realizations that this is advancement. It doesn't mean title or office location. What are you doing? What's your legacy? I say it all the time. I've never seen a U-Haul following a hearse before.
Yeah. Yeah, big time. Well, first, congratulations. That's so stinking cool.
Thank you. So
but
awesome.
Honestly, like if I had the opportunity to predict the future and how things would go, especially from a career standpoint, I would have lost years ago of how this winding, awesome journey sort of presents itself in front of you. And it's finding that fine line, and I'd love to pick your brain on this idea around, you know, it's all about luck, you know, and no matter how much you plan or strive for achieving a particular goal or what you envision your future to be, you know, when you lay those plans out, the universe kind of chuckles and says, yeah, okay, cool. I love that you've got all of these plans, but watch me change them. And I don't want to get into the mindset of no matter how much pre-planning or, you know, betting on yourself that you do, none of it matters in the long run. There's something around that creating your own luck versus just taking your hands off the wheel and just seeing where the universe takes you. And I don't want to leave all of these incredible conversations and accomplishments that we've had around, yeah, well, no matter how much planning we would have done, it would have just fallen into our laps anyways. So how do you square that in your mind, the notion of, yes, planning is important. It's not necessarily everything, but at the same time, what you've accomplished isn't luck because you've created it. Like, how do you square that?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's such a great question. And I mm-hmm. think that, you know, I loved your statement on, you know, driving.
Yeah.
And you know, not taking your hands off the wheel, having a direction, right? We have a roadmap, right? Our roadmap largely is based off of our hierarchy of needs, right? Yeah. It's what do I actually need to achieve?
Yeah.
And, you know, I met this girl and was in awe of her. She's an HR person. And she would, like, literally every December spend every hour after work planning what her 2024, 2025 would look like. And so when she came in on January 1st, she almost had like this little personal strategic plan. And I was like, that feels like a wasted life to sit down and think that you're just going to plan everything and it's just going to go like that. And, you know, I have a tattoo on my back, an Ellie Furtado song. And the lyric is, and I have lived so many lives, though I'm not old. Mm-hmm. And when I'm old, it might be a little weird, but maybe not. I mean, age is a perception, right? But I think in terms of like, how you reconcile that, I think we do the things that we know will facilitate the feelings that we want. And if there's one area of my reflection that I think is super powerful, is that what didn't come to me is what I thought was going to give me a feeling, a vibe, the desire to be the person that I am, when in actual fact, maybe moving into venture capital is not where I'm best served. When I have nonprofits knocking on my door, asking me to help build facilitations and help them build their organization structures. Right. Yeah. So I think it's, you almost have to have your feet in both streams, because to not plan and have a vision for where you want to go, I think that's really what it comes down to. But I think it's being resilient and flexible enough to kind of just roll with it. right? Like, talk to me a little bit about more, right? When you think of more, have you really like leaned in? And when you have that achievement, do you think to yourself, yep, that's more?
Yeah, 100%. And I think for me, I've really focused on getting in touch with my values as an employee, as a consultant, and setting myself up and doing the things that align with those values. And it's really interesting that once you start understanding who you are, what you stand for, all of the opportunities that come your way are either in line with those values or not. And it will really allow an easy peasy view of where you should go next. So a perfect example of this is, you know, pre-pandemic, early in my career, I felt like, and this definitely isn't all tech organizations, but I think many at the time were very, very focused on the people. What are we going to do in order to support our candidates, our people, our seasoned vets in having a beautiful career in this space? And you would see an influx in, you know, we will prepare meals for you. Our health and wellness teams are here. We want to focus on culture. We want to make sure that we've got folks that are really in the trenches to support and help our organizations. That was very key to the success of a lot of tech organizations. And as sort of the winds have blown in the direction that they are, some tech organizations are still, that is still near and dear and a part of the blueprint. Others, not so much. But when you're in those organizations and you know what you value, you know what's important to you, where an organization or a company chooses to go, suddenly it becomes very easy of whether or not you can continue to go in that direction with them. Mm-hmm. And I realized for me personally that I am very much in the headspace and have the goal of always, you know, pouring into others and being of service. And that I was able to live and breathe that daily in the tech space 5-10 years ago. And then I realized that it started to become more of a challenge, and more of a challenge in a way that just didn't resonate and line up with my values in that moment. And I realized, okay, I think I have to switch courses here and perhaps consider other organizations and industries. And so the more for me is, what can I be doing to capitalize on what I am able to bring to the table and making sure I am aligned with roles, organizations, industries that I'm able to bring my full self to. And for me right now in this moment, my more and being able to do more and have more impact is healthcare. And I'm in an incredible role and hospital and community that I can give all of what I bring to the table. And it's actually exactly what that industry needs in this moment. And it's so cool when your version of your best is received from an organization or an industry that's like, yes, we so desperately need that version, that thing here. And it doesn't feel like a battle, you know?
100%. You know, I as you're talking, I'm nodding my head and I'm like, yes, 100%. This is what I love about consulting though, right? And this is, I mean, consulting allows you to really be impactful in what you do, right? And there's actually two conversations inside of this, just what you'd said. And first and foremost, I am just so delighted and excited for you because I know that tech was hard on you, particularly in those last 2 years. Like, it was heart-wrenching to see the amount of effort and energy and love that you were putting in to then receive back, you know, layoff notices and, you know, those things. I mean, like, it doesn't matter how self-confident we are. What we receive when an organization does a round of layoffs and they're saying, well, employee engagement professional, we just don't need you anymore. You're now telling me that the culture I subscribed to for so long is not actually what I thought it was, because people aren't the focus.
Yes.
But then there's the personal side where it's, I'm not enough. I wasn't enough for you to repurpose me or to find a space. My Swiss Army knife-esque behavior just isn't there. And so, you know, I'm so delighted that you found a space where you can actually bring your whole self and be that beam of light. And healthcare is a hard industry. It's a very hard industry. People don't realize how hard it is. My mom was a nurse for like 35 years. And, you know, so... But when you talk about working with groups who are like, I want more of that, give me more of that. And it's not just shown to you in after work. I received a text. I was on a meeting this morning with a group of executives on a very large project. And I got off the call and ran to my next meeting. And before I had even clicked join on my next meeting, I received a text message from an executive that said, you are never, ever, ever leaving. Just saying, thank you for all you do.
That's the best.
Right? And it's like, that's your whole self. That's more impact. And it's not, and this is the fine line, I think, that a lot of people struggle with when they've set a goal. And this is why I don't set goals. I use words. What word gives me the emotion or the feeling or the contribution level? Like, it's so powerful.
Yeah. 100%. And I think, again, when you start to reframe it around what word do you want to, word or words, do you want to select that really allow you to stay hyper-focused on goals and where you want to be and what you want to achieve, but also how you want to feel while doing it. And it does not matter to me how many clients I take on or projects that I'm responsible for, because they all align with who I am and what I stand for. It's actually incredible when you get to a point where each project pours into the other project. So it almost feels like I'm able to capitalize on the work that I'm doing in one to help support the work that I'm doing in another, because I'm thinking and feeling and supporting projects that line up to my values, but also projects that focus heavily on giving and being more to a client or an organization. And it all just compounds and in a really, really cool and positive way. And then suddenly you're getting those invitations to join a call and join a team and assist and support in other ways. And as long as you're leaning into that, you know, what can I do to serve? My gosh, the community that you build is just mind-blowing, you know?
It really is. And, you know, that just reminds me, like, I remember I came into an organization, my first really substantive job in oil and gas. So Ruth and I moved to the South during the middle of, like, a recession. It was 2007, 2008 when we moved down here. I did this really terrible contract with one of the worst companies I've ever worked for in my entire career. And then I ended up going and doing some temp work. And then this temp agency placed me with a major oil and gas company. And they had just, and I was like, oh, they had me listed on HSE 1331 or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, so I must be in health and safety. So cool. Like, I know nothing about that, but I'm a quick study.
Yep.
So fast forward, I get in there and it turns out to be IT.
Yep.
Cool. I love tech. And so they say to me, you're going to be the executive assistant to the senior management team, including the CIO. Cool. Yep. So I get in there and I've got a little office, and I was like, never had an office before other than like when I work for government. This is cool. Yep. And then they hand me two assistants. And they said, okay, so these are your assistants. And I was like, what do you mean these are my assistants? Like, of course, I'm like 26, 27 years old. And I'm like, so I have two assistants, both of which are, you know, one lady's like in her 50s, the other is in her late 40s. And I'm like, I don't, like, why do I need assistants? Like, am I not the assistant? And they were like, no, you're managing like all of these different things. And I was like, okay, not a big deal.
Yeah.
So I was going and I was trying to collect pieces that I felt were key to my job in serving the CIO. They had just gone through a restructure and it was not executed well. So they cut deep and they bled hard. And so they're literally, my assistants are walking me around this office, introducing me to people. And I'm saying, so what do you do? And they're like, I don't know. And I was like, ooh, okay. So that tells you something about the culture. If somebody's willing to be really flippant and dismissive almost about their feeling of the culture with the CIO's executive assistant. Now, the group that was in there doing this was actually leaving and a new CIO was coming in, which is why they brought me in at the same time, but a couple of weeks earlier. so that I could set the tone and kind of get things moving in the right direction for this guy. Great. So there was this report that they used to write on all of the IT projects and all of the initiatives. I shit you not, it was like 68 to 75 pages, sometimes 80 pages long every month. And I'm like, what are you reporting on? And it was like, literally, they were changing like minor things. And so they had taken it and they'd given it to this woman who was a business analyst in the business management space. And so I was like, okay, well, I can handle that. Like, it's a report. So I went to her and I was like, you know, I'd really like to get my hands on that report and study it and understand what I need to do for collection and whatever. Yeah. And I guess I must have ruffled feathers because of my like bravado of like just wanting to serve and work. Yeah. And of course, when you're in an environment where people are hurt and they're disengaged and they're angry, you know, everybody's defensive and they're also really not looking to serve the overachiever. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I came in the next morning and I had this daily meeting. It was just, I think about this daily meeting with the former woman who had been in my position, and she sits down with me and she was a very stern woman, and she and I had a great relationship, and, you know, she's very stern though. And she said to me, I've been receiving complaints about you. And I was like, what do you mean? And she says to me, well, she said, you walk really aggressively. And I was like, stop. Stop it. Mm-hmm. Like we have a saying in our house, if you walk with purpose, you collide with destiny.
Yeah.
Right. And so I have very good posture. I am a very large woman. Like, I mean, you know, I'm 5'8" and I take up some space, but I also have this personality. Right. So for me, I was like totally taken aback. I was like, what do you mean I'm offending people? Well, and then you went to this BA and you were trying to wrestle this report away. And I was like, that is absolutely not how I saw it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when somebody opens that Johari window, which I think is important, it's hard. But at the end of the day, sometimes it's not about me, even if it's targeted toward me. Mm-hmm. And so I went back to this woman's office, and she's a lovely woman. She'd recently been widowed. She's a little bit older and I think grossly misunderstood, probably one of the most blue personalities I think I've ever met outside of an engineer. Mm-hmm. And I sat with her and I said, I apologize for, you know, kind of upending your afternoon and making you feel basically some kind of way. And she said to me, it's not that you're, she's like, I can see what your intent is. And I was very young at the time, right? I'm 27. And she said to me, but if you approach everything with the thought process of how can I help you? I'm happy to help. Mm-hmm. Those two statements completely change everything. And your story and, you know, you saying, you know, you want to be a helper, you want to be that person who brings an organization forward, you want to be a fixer. Like, that's inherently what I was trying to do, but I just didn't have the, I want to say, emotional intelligence to be able to drive my result to meet me where I was. I wanted to be giving more, but they weren't ready to receive more. So how do you create that balance for your clients? Because you and I are both very similar people in our enthusiasm and our desire to, you know, fill a room and really bring people along the journey and help them see the vision that we see. How do you do that without being overwhelmed and being told that you're too much?
Yeah, it's a really good question because we are a vibe, aren't we?
We are. Let's be real.
I think for me, I always try and keep front and center in my mind that there's a reason why we have two ears and one mouth, that we need to be doing more listening than we do speaking. And I think when you're establishing relationships, when you're connecting with a client, when you're the newbie in, you know, the role that you've been hired to do, I think starting from a place of listening and collecting as much information as you can, once you've done that and you start to build out a bit of a hypothesis, I think honing that by being very open and transparent on how you're looking to understand, help me understand. And from there, I mean, if you've been hired to do a particular role, responsibility, job, project, I think if you come from the place of I've listened. Here's the information I've collected. I have asked folks to help me understand. And now I've built a bit of a hypothesis to determine next steps. Have I nailed it? Are we there? Am I close? If I'm not, where have I missed? And I think I feel like we've had this conversation around curiosity. If you lead from the position of curiosity and collecting information, it takes the ego away. It also takes that uncomfortable, like, who does this person think she is vibe mm-hmm. away, because you're really there just to ask why and to ask questions about why things have been done a certain way and how together you can build a path forward. And I think as long as you are focused on curiosity, listening, and building that hypothesis, that it's not set in stone. Hypothesis is very much your, you know,
theories
view. Yeah. On like, here is my theory. This isn't a law. This isn't written in stone. Have we nailed it? And from there, you can start to build that credibility and you can start to build that collaboration, and everyone feels like they're a part of the thing versus it being my thing. Mm-hmm. And that's helped a lot, because I think early in careers, people believe that the more information that you have and keep to yourself and build something and stamp your name on it, the more powerful you are. Whereas in my opinion, true leadership is about bringing everyone forward and you being closer to the back than you are the front. You want to elevate the voices, right? Versus you being the voice. So I think just setting your intentions, being very open and honest, and listening a whole heck of a lot helps to mitigate that vibe that people will sometimes create about you with respect to why you're there and what your intentions are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I do. And I love what you said of, you know, standing and really looking at and leading from a place of curiosity. And I love that, because it fits into kind of something that I bring to my clients as well. And it's, you know, not just our leadership style, but also like who we are as people, right? And because, you know, curiosity is something that sometimes has to be fostered, right? Because if you were raised in a home where asking questions got you a backhand, well, yeah. You're not going to be curious, because you've been taught that curiosity is unacceptable. And, you know, what I find as well when I get into organizations is that oftentimes we have two different styles that people lead or behave from. One is fear and the other is love. And when you have a mismatch in that space and you try and layer in something like curiosity, people who are fearful become mean and they become spiteful and they become worried about what you're going to uncover. Right. And that, so this is where I think the delineation between communications and engagement and actual change leadership and driving cultural change have a really, really, really visceral intersection if they're not managed properly. And that can be really like, you could step on a minefield and not even realize it. Like, I had that happen on a major project. I was like 2 days out from a competition and I received some really, really crazy feedback that I was just like blown away from, to the point where, you know, I actually had tears coming down my face because I was like dieted to shit. And, you know, you know, and you're receiving this feedback and it's like my emotional regulation's like completely non-existent because I'm hungry and I'm tired and I'm, you know, 2 days out from a show and all these things. And really what it was somebody had perceived something because they were operating from a space of fear, and my operation from a place of love and my curiosity and my recommendations felt offensive to them. And so I was just like, I was incredibly humble with that. And I was like, absolutely, appalled that this person was left feeling the way that I left them feeling, because it was never my intent. But again, I don't operate out of a space of fear. And I also don't behave or operate in a space where I have to come in and tell you how great I am. You know why? Because you're paying my rate and you invited me to come into your house.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think those things are just so powerful in terms of how we engage with people and how we actually get the work done.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting too, because I feel like curiosity oftentimes is viewed as something, it's sort of a byproduct of being a newbie or being super green, is that I'm curious because I know shit about shit when it comes to the particular area of expertise that we're talking about. So I'm going to get curious, ask why, and oftentimes ask why again, or ask for clarification, because I need as much information and context as humanly possible in order for me to do my job well. And isn't it interesting that over time, as you build excellence and as you hone a craft, or you get really, really strong and good at what you're doing, curiosity starts to die off because you feel like you don't need it anymore. I am an expert in the space. I am super strong and valuable in what I bring to the table. And I actually don't need to be curious anymore, because the second you start talking client, I know exactly what you need and I don't need to ask why. In fact, the less questions I can ask, the better, because I look like a rock star for it. Absolutely. And I think that's a trap. And I think that curiosity not only shows interest and care, it's also vulnerable. And it's also a way that whoever you're talking to knows that they're not a cookie cutter situation, that what they're bringing to the table is different. And the same goes for any job situation. If you're a brand new sales rep picking up that phone for the first time and cold calling, you're curious to understand the inner workings of someone's business so that you can best pitch to them and collaborate with them on what they need. If you're in the consulting space, again, you want to be so dialed in and can truly relate to the needs of a particular client and work together to build something incredible. And I think we need to bring back curiosity, because it truly saves us from stepping in it when we assume that, you know, we understand deeply what someone's bringing to the table, but we haven't asked them why, and we haven't asked them to clarify. We haven't listened. We've just talked all over them. And in our minds, think have hit, you know, the ball out of the park, and it's all ego. Whereas curiosity forces us to kind of take a step back and really pause and deeply understand who we're sitting across the table from. Absolutely. And yeah, I think we need to be more curious and bring it back, and it not be seen as like the rookie move, you know?
So I guess if we were to button this all up,
yeah,
curiosity will bring you more advancement.
Yes. There it is.
Oh, I'm so happy that we're back together. I can't wait for our next recording. It's been too long, and we're really happy to be reunited. And listeners, we are so happy and grateful for you sticking around and waiting on us as we're out there achieving more and advancing as we do it. Final thoughts from you, Lauren?
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you for the conversation. And honestly, folks, nothing fills my bucket more than these types of conversations and hearing from you. So please, please, please reach out to us, share your stories, share how these sort of tidbits have helped you out along the way, and let's keep the conversation going.
Love it. As always, listeners, if there is any content you'd like to see us cover, any questions you'd like us to answer, anyone you'd like to have us on the pod, reach out. A call doesn't cost a thing.